that it's still an it's still an open case. They don't know who did. Okay, let me rephrase that. We fucking know who did it, but they won't believe who did it because there's not enough evidence, apparently, according to investigators. There's not enough evidence to pin him on the charge. And he's dead, so it's not like it fucking matters, but, like, it does matter for the families.
Victims and the family.
Okay. What are we starting? What are we doing? What's this podcast called?
We're
anyway, okay.
I don't know. We go off, like, on just, like, mini hiatuses all the time. I forget.
Okay.
Well, a lot of shit has happened, yeah. So that's why.
No one get comfortable with us posting again. We don't know when it's going to be regular again. Unfortunately, this is just a puzzle piece in our lives right now.
Yeah.
That we have to make work outside of priorities like our jobs and our mental health and family commitments.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm excited.
Why?
Why?
My birthday's in 9 days.
Yes, it is.
Happy birthday, girl.
Happy early birthday,
Happy
Kitty.
Happy early birthday.
We're recording 3 episodes today because Kitty is going on vacation for her birthday.
You're
2. We're recording
I
2.
I might do mine. I don't know yet.
Okay. We'll figure it out. Yeah, Kitty's going out of town for her birthday. She's flying back home. So we are recording 2, maybe 3 episodes today, so we're excited. Okay. Welcome, everyone, to Spooky Time Tea, the podcast where we talk... What's the intro? Where is it?
We never replaced it after moving all the shit out of here.
Did we?
Nope. That's
the closing.
Fuck off. Okay. Hold on. I can remember.
Okay,
it. Give me a second.
I'm adding it to my to-do list now.
I have
to...
Welcome, everyone, to Spooky Time Tea, the show where we talk about ghosts, ghouls, murders, and mysteries, and everything in between, all while enjoying a cup of tea, like a tea party, but spooky.
We're back, bitches-ish.
We're kind of back.
We're working
as Cleo.
Oh, my God! Fine, I won't be in this episode.
I'm sorry.
As Chloe mentioned before, this is, I like the way you put it, this is kind of a puzzle piece in our lives right now, so posting regularly isn't, like, we can't really do that, like, we can occasionally.
Yeah. Very recently, it's been us trying to jam a piece that doesn't fit into the wrong spot, and then it finally, like, fell into its right place.
So we post, pretty much every 2 Fridays, I'd say, right now, has been kind of consistent, is, like...
I can pull up the dates, I have our podcast up.
Yeah, we've been posting pretty inconsistently because of work and social commitments. I just got a promotion, so I've super, super busy.
Ooh, that's my best friend!
Holy shit!
Oh, yeah, we're at 2.9K, so Kat's episode's going to send us into 3K.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, and my episode got a lot of listens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
I still want it noted that my Salem Witch Trials is still double the next one beneath.
Nice.
Anyways,
we also have 4 co-hosts to get today, so sorry if you
doggos.
If you hear a lot of walking around and panting, there are 4 dogs in this room with us currently.
They're actually pretty chill right now.
Right now they're chill. Bella's chilling out behind me.
I like this little catch-up session. It's real cozy. And her, it's really getting me back into
her tail started wagging as soon as I said her name.
Hi, baby.
She got her toy. She got her little rhino.
But yes, promotions and life things and... Getting back into work. I just moved back into Kitty's after being gone for, 2 months because of my surgery? Mm-hmm. So I had to move back in.
But you fully officially moved in.
I fully officially moved in. I unpacked every single box that was at my mom's house that she was holding for me for storage because my mom moved back to Denver. So there was moving of multiple people and job promotions and work bonding at our paying jobs.
I would like to cry real quick that... My best friend of 15 years, I've known her since the 4th grade. We've been best friends ever since. Her and her husband lived next door to me for 2 years. They lived
literally like
5 feet away from me in the apartment right next to me for 2 years. And they just moved away into a much cooler place, but it's like an hour away. And I'm very upset. It's actually like, it's not a bad drive. I mean, okay, it depends on the time of day. It's a bad drive because you have to take 35. But
in the chat, boys.
F in the chat, man. So I was so sad, but I went over there. They moved. I shit you not. Moved in one night. They started packing the day before they were supposed to move out of the apartment. They started packing. They moved into their apartment that night. Literally stayed up all night. She said they started moving stuff over around midnight-ish and did not go to bed until 10 a.m. the next morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they stayed up all night unpacking. They didn't have a lot.
That was my people, man.
So they like.
I was raised doing that
I
shit.
Wish I could do that. I wish I could.
I mean,
you like
stress
drills,
me out.
Because I did that once or twice a year until I was
when
14.
I move, when I move, you will definitely be the person that I call for like organization purposes.
I love you, and you're one of my best friends in the whole world. So are you. That is not the friend I wanted to be. I don't want to be the moving friend.
You're not going to be the moving friend.
I also didn't want to be the mom friend, but yet that happens all the fucking time.
Well, I mean, Kitty, come on. You are kind of a mom.
So outside of our individual friendship, we're all the mom friends to separate friend groups.
Yes, it depends on the friend group.
You've just kind of taken over, like, supreme mother over me and Kat, who become children.
Okay, you should be honored by the title of supreme mother. I just want to throw it out there.
That is pretty.
We're going to make you a sash, like Miss USA style. You think I ain't going to do it? You're gone for a week. I have reign of the house. I'm going to do so many things.
We'll give you a crown of crystals.
Yay, I love that.
I think I found one on Amazon that's pretty cute.
Ooh.
So I've definitely gotten into my practice again, so I'm very excited.
Mm-hmm.
And I've felt so much better since starting to do that again, like doing my daily meditations and, you know, all that kind of stuff, like in doing journaling and things like that. So I am very, I don't know if you guys have seen any energy shift from me lately.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, 1,000%.
100%.
You're a lot happier, and it's just, you seem to be like just a lot. I don't know how to explain it. It's not like I can't physically see it, but I feel like this more like bright, vibrant energy around you than it used to be. And I've always loved you. You're one of my best friends in the whole world, but like it's really great seeing you in the most positive place I've ever known you. And so I'm really proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah. And therapy has been helpful too.
Mm-hmm.
My relationship, you know, is working out quite well.
Yeah.
Things have been, you've even seen a change in him too. Like,
yeah, granted, we're not around each other much at all, because I'm also going through therapy. We're kind of digging deeper into my stuff, and so I've kind of realized that I am, as I phrased to Kat, I'm working on a book right now, but I would classify myself as a runaway. I run away from my problems, I run away from my emotions, I don't do things. My room is a safe space where I don't have to run away, so when I'm tired at the end of the day, or I've had so much shit going on, I've just constantly been in my room, but
no, but I like it because you actually have been coming out, though.
Yeah,
lately.
I think it's a little bit not forcing myself to, but like pushing myself to make that active change. And then also I feel like it's been easier to do that when I feel like such a bright energy outside of my room.
And I've been making it like very cozy.
It's so cozy in here. Guys, it is July 8th. It feels like it's fall and I love it.
I'm so happy.
It feels like it's summer outside.
Yeah.
But in this house, it feels cozy and fall. And I have a mulled cider candle in my room right now and like my fairy lights. So let me live my basic white girl dreams.
I'm telling you, all those crystals that I have around the house have been doing wonders. Yeah,
and I've worked on, I'm still kind of getting new into this whole, finding what works for me, spirituality stuff and wise. I got a piece of obsidian for my birthday, and then you gave me a rose quartz, is that one, last week?
Yep.
And so I did some research on it and recharged them last night while I was meditating using, like, visualization, because that's one of the methods that I felt comfortable with currently. Also, it was the easiest.
Yes.
So I was like, kind of feeling like the energy of these crystals kind of like wearing off, and I had been noticing kind of a difference. I like charged them last night, and I did it while I did a body positive meditation, which I'm also working on. So it was like really awesome how the rose quartz was good for love and then self-love in that.
Yep.
And the obsidian, you know, like to get rid of the negative thoughts and just have those recharged. And so it's really cool. There's like, I feel way more positive. I think a lot of it, I also started a new ADHD medication yesterday.
Oh, I thought you were going to sneeze.
No, I'm tired morning early.
2 hours of sleep, bitches.
Yep.
I went to bed at 4, woke up at 6. Not kidding. I have the sleep app tracking to prove it.
But I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Too. Like, you know, I'm proud of all of you guys. You guys have been expanding and like, you've been working on yourself, you know, lately too, and you've been working.
And Kat got back into her writing, and it's incredible. Oh, I snuck read a few things, and it's really, really good.
I'm very excited about it.
I don't
mind. She was like there, so it's
I don't like.
She didn't stop.
Athena
me.
Has snuck read a lot of my stuff. Apparently, she's like, "Well, it'll just be open on the computer at work, and I'll just."
That's true. It's very open right there.
Yeah, I'm not hiding it. Like, I don't care. I will say that draft one is a burning dumpster fire, and I can't wait to edit it. But
I want it noted. Kat says it's a burning dumpster fire. It's some of the best piece of literature I've ever
read. No, incorrect. But thank you. I'm glad that you think that.
Here's the thing. thing. Twilight and 50 Shades of Grey were both bestsellers. Not great writing, but they were bestsellers. That beats that a trillion times full because it's incredible writing.
Thank you. Chapters 1-6 still make me laugh because they're awful, but I can't wait to go back and edit.
But those
them.
Are early chapters in the book. Kind of when you're piecing things together. But yeah, new ADHD medication started yesterday. Feeling great.
I'm also very proud of both of you.
Dude, did you know that ADHD medication with, I don't know if it's like while mixed with my also anti-anxiety, but while I was on my anti-anxiety the last week or two, I felt really, really like less anxiety than when I wasn't taking it for when I ran out and couldn't afford the refill. Mm-hmm. But still I had this weird heightened like insecurity and anxiousness, specifically regarding friendships. And I had to logically remind myself that my friends love me and it's my past talking and kind of my anxiety because when I was medicated previously before running out and upping my dosage, I felt fine.
Yeah.
And so I started taking the ADHD medication. I took my first dose of it yesterday at 9 a.m. And the entire day, I had never been happier. I'd never been more secure in my friendships. I got a fuck ton done. You would think I was like a fucking squirrel on crack. But I'm working on, like, slowing that down. Also, I mixed it with coffee, which was not recommended. My psychiatrist may have said it, my heart might explode, but... I'm not doing that today. We're seeing how it is. But that's just a personality trait, I think, when I'm, like, at my best, is I talk fast and I get really excited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so working on keeping that energy, but kind of slowing down.
Yeah.
But...
keep that energy, babe.
Yeah. But the... because up until then, I'm tired all the goddamn time. Mm-hmm. I, like, can't do anything, can't motivate myself. So this ADHD medication yesterday was an entirely different person.
Yeah.
I haven't been that person ever.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And so it was really exciting to see that and to see that a medication that I specifically got to help me remember to do things because I would forget in 30 seconds. I had this terrible short-term memory and remember to focus on things and give me the initiative to start projects I've been wanting to start for literally years.
Mm-hmm.
That took away anxiety was incredible.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Remember, guys, get the help that you need. Like, it's okay. We've all been on, like, a kind of extended from our original mental health break.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to talk about and share, especially with someone like
vague
platform that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be like, hey, we're going through it. Like, we are three women living in Texas, a very red
state.
With... all of us have varying extremities of mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, and, you know, life circumstances that are happening around us right now, which are our own and private, but we know each other's stuff. And it's really hard for a lot of us. And so the fact that, like, we're all learning and growing is, like, incredible. And we want to share that with people so that they know.
That it's okay.
That it's okay. And then you're going to, like, there's no shame in getting the things that you need to function and be your best and your happiest self.
There's no shame in asking for help.
Yeah. I also saw this podcast. I'm just going to plug it real quick on Unladylike.
Mm-hmm.
Really great podcast. They recently posted an episode on unlearning shame. And the woman that was the guest, I forget her name. Hold on, let me look it up. She wrote a book, and I will find it. Hold on.
Well, you do that. Is it okay if I'm kind of throwing a thing right now?
Yeah, go for it.
So for my birthday, I am fundraising for the suicide prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And because I had lost a cousin to suicide and stuff, and, like, it's a topic that's, you know, very sensitive and stuff to me, and especially since we're talking about mental health and everything like that, I've already raised $100.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
And, you know, if you guys, you don't have to, like, donate to my cause, but if you guys ever, like, come across any, like, those kind of suicide prevention or awareness things, like, campaigns, like, if you can donate anything, even 25 cents would be, like, super appreciated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
of course,
given, you know, the state of the world that we live in, if you can't afford to donate, like, share that shit.
Yeah.
Social media goes a long way, and people that can donate will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't have the funds to donate right now, but last month was one of my friend's birthdays, and it was my first month back at work having, like, a paycheck post-surgery. So I just threw in $10 towards the Trevor Project, because that's incredibly important.
Yeah.
And when I can't do it, I'll pass it along. Like, when I can, I'll cover it.
Absolutely. So,
I think it's really important, especially with the conversation we're starting with, to, like, if you can donate to something, donate. If you can help raise awareness of something that you really believe in, raise awareness of it. Like,
absolutely.
That's how we get the resources to, like, help break down the walls of shame that are built around getting help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really important. Thank you for sharing, Katie.
No problem.
Okay. They had this woman on, Ashley C. Ford, and she wrote this book. Hold on, let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Essentially on unlearning shame, she had said something along the lines, and it's not an exact quote because I listened to it a couple days ago, that a vast majority of people are walking around with a bundle of shame that is not theirs. It was given to them by somebody else. And so it's unlearning the shame that it was given to you, and then just unlearning shame that you don't need to have in general.
Yeah.
And it was really cool.
That is cool. Yeah. That's something you don't really think about.
No, it's really not.
But I'm actually excited to read that. I'm going to read it.
The book, or are you going to listen to the podcast?
I'm going to listen to the podcast, but I want to buy the book.
Yeah. The podcast was really incredible. It's kind of like very short form. It was like 30 minutes, so it was a really easy listen, especially with someone that has a non-existent attention span. Mm-hmm. But it really got me thinking. Like, the last few days, I've been really just kind of making myself consume content where I can learn and grow, because I've kind of just been in like a mindless mm-hmm. content consumption recently. Mm-hmm. So I've really been digging, like, making myself think. Yeah. You look so tired, sweetie.
I don't know why. Well, I know why. But I slept on the couch last night, and the cats kept me awake all night.
What did I tell you this morning?
What? That you didn't sleep?
No. So I said, she asked if you were on your way, and you hadn't responded. So I said, she's either in the shower or driving here because she hasn't responded, or, because this happens sometimes, she fell back asleep on the couch and the cats are bothering her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I'll usually sleep on the couch so the cats don't wake Tommy up, or vice versa, depending on who has to be up early and who doesn't. But last night, the cats bothered me relentlessly, and also, for some reason, the first couple hours of sleep, I was having terrible dreams. Like, waking up in an anxious panic. And I don't even remember them, which sucks. But they were weird. Very weird dreams.
Okay, so I found the name of the book. It's Somebody's Daughter by Ashley C. Riley. It made, like, Oprah Winfrey's publishing. Like, it's an mm-hmm. Oprah book as of June 1st of this year.
Nice.
It came out in 2018. Awesome. But yeah. Wow.
All right. We should definitely do our TT.
Yeah, what?
Don't call it that.
What kind of tea are we having today, Kitty?
We are having rooibos chai from Spice and Tea Exchange.
Yeah.
And shout out to Skylar, who's one of my great friends who likes to send me tea packages.
Hell yeah, dude.
He sent me a whole bunch of them. So we have a lot of different ones we haven't tried yet.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited for that.
I'm also excited.
There's a relaxing vanilla chai, or not a vanilla chai, but like a vanilla rooibos one mm-hmm. that he sent that I'm
That sounds good. That sounds
for.
Really good. This is a very fall flavor. I'm very excited.
Let us live our basic white girl dreams. We don't shame people for doing things that make them happy, especially post-pandemic.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Chloe? Yes. When? I'm kidding. Okay, good enough. You also spilled it.
Got it.
I figured as much. I spilled a couple.
Okay, is this one that I add honey to or not?
I mean, you never add honey to yours.
Okay, but I need to start listening to you guys.
Thank you.
You should. Yes, I would.
Yeah, okay. But there's only, I mean, you can't even add honey to that. I'll be overwhelmed by the honey flavor.
Just do a little, like, splash.
Like a dot.
Yeah.
Like if you add honey, just a dot of honey.
Oh, it smells so good, though.
So while we stir our tea, let me introduce what we're talking about today.
Please do. Yes. Guys, I'm so excited to be back.
Me too. We haven't done this in way too long. So in honor of the new movie coming out, today we'll be talking about Ed and Lorraine Warren in the case of The Devil Made Me Do It. Which is not as interesting as the movie makes it seem. Oh. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Did you just let me down for like a huge disappointment of being like not scared?
Yeah. It's not that scary.
It's 11 a.m. If there's any time to make me scared, it's when we're recording in the mornings.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish that there was more. I did a lot of research on it, and there's not a lot. It's very...
That's my cup.
It's very kind of... Well, you said you were going to put honey in yours.
The remnants that's on your spoon is probably enough honey.
Let's clink, you guys. Ready? One.
It's good to be back.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's good.
I don't like it. I don't hate it.
I think mine is
that's
a little
good. That's progress. You don't hate it.
A little too much honey on mine.
Like, I would never choose this, actually. I can taste, like, the little honey from the spoon.
Do you want to add a little more to it so that way it's...
Just a splash, if you wouldn't mind.
It makes me feel very fall-y, which I like, but it still has that overwhelming tea flavor.
Good. Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, today we're talking about how the devil made him do it.
Hell yeah.
So, it's February 16th, 1981. A man named Arne Johnson, 19 years old, gets into an argument with another man, Alan Bono, age 40, who is his landlord, outside of a dog kennel in Brookfield, Connecticut. The argument ends when Arne Johnson lunges at Alan Bono and stabs him to death with a 5-inch pocket knife. The case seems cut and dry, right? Like, okay.
Hold on. Like that big?
5-inch, yeah.
Yeah, roughly. That's...
I mean, it's a decent size, yeah.
Yeah, that could do some serious damage. Like, that's halfway through my body.
Well, like, isn't, like, this, like, considered an inch?
No. That's, like, 3/4 of an inch, maybe.
This is considered an inch. This.
Well, and the everyone's knuckles are different sizes. That's dumb measurement. Hold on. Wait, let me Google how tall a Starbucks... Wait, hold on. I can have this solved in 2 seconds.
I wish we just had a ruler.
I know. I don't know where my rulers are.
Your measuring tape's in the party room.
Oh, wait. I got it.
You found it?
I got one right here.
Awesome. There you go.
So, let's see. You said 5 inches?
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, it's pretty decent length. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, small, but not for a pocket knife.
That's pretty big.
For a pocket knife.
Yeah.
It's like not a knife, but it's like also borderline too big to be a pocket knife.
Yeah.
So this is 7.2 inches. I just Googled it.
So this all seems very cut and dry. A man killed another man, stabbed him to death with a pocket knife. Only thing is that Johnson claims that he has no memory of killing this man. Absolutely none. So we'll fast forward to the courtroom. The time comes for Johnson to plead guilty. There were witnesses to the scene, several in fact. Johnson's 2 younger sisters and girlfriend, Deborah Glatzel. Glatzel, whatever. However, Johnson pleads not guilty. Not guilty due to demonic possession.
Wow.
And that's...
He realizes he has to prove that in a court of law, right? Mm. With, like, the skeptic...
Actually...
Like, the skeptiest of skeptics.
He didn't claim it. His attorney did.
He should find a new attorney.
Definitely.
So, Arne Johnson quickly rose to morbid fame as the first person to ever attempt to claim not guilty on the stand due to any sort of paranormal involvement.
Yeah, this like, was the first time. Not gonna work. It's fucking. No. It's not crazy because we don't use that word. It's unbelievable because you have to prove it.
Yeah,
The paranormal thing. There's no like. I believe in ghosts. Mm-hmm. It is so hard to prove something, especially to people that don't believe in it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Religion.
So, Arne Johnson's girlfriend, Deborah Glatzel, claims he was at the scene of her younger brother David's exorcism only weeks before. Now, let's get into David and
what? Hello?
Bella's trying to make herself a lap dog
Bella
in that corner.
Bella is really trying.
did you hear her trying to, like, scoot into a ball? She disappeared for a second. It worked for a second.
So... David Glatzel and his family moved to what they thought was their dream house in the summer of 1980.
It's always a trap.
In the woods.
Don't buy homes.
David claimed several things right after moving in. He said he felt something push him under the bed. He said he saw a old man with pointed ears, jagged teeth, and black eyes in a torn plaid shirt and blue jeans and hear him say, "Beware," because... Sorry, I was I'm reading off of an article right now from Den of Geek, and I just pulled this up because it has a lot of information I didn't feel like writing down. But I love this line that I did not see before that says, "Because demons always give advance notice."
Look, I don't know about you, but when I'm ready to ruin a guy's week, I text him first.
So David continues to see this man. He continues to complain. Mm-hmm. He claims to have visions. He starts getting...
Does this man ever give David his name?
I don't think so. Didn't say.
Red flag number one. Yeah. It's a J name, you know it.
David starts to have episodes and gets more violent and abusive with his parents. And his mother, Judy Glatzel, has heard of Ed and Lorraine Warren and calls them out to the house to inspect David, basically. And Lorraine don't take long to pronounce the visions as inhuman and evil. Apparently, David had one of his dinosaur toys had been talking. And Lorraine Warren claimed to have seen David levitate and predict an as-yet uncommitted murder.
How old is David?
David, oh gosh, I think he was 8.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I believe he was about 8 years old.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
No, you're fine. Was trying I'm to losing. So
make something funny.
Again.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work if he's a kid.
No, okay. So this has all happened. That's literally all I could find on it. Lorraine Warren claimed back in 2006 that there was a lot more to the case and that there was the creme de la creme, the Catholic Church, was involved, and there's a lot of files on it. Those files are not accessible. So,
And this was in the 70s? 80s?
80s, yeah.
Okay. Is it something that at least the court case, like, we could access public documents on if we had the monetary funds?
Possibly. Lorraine also claimed that she had seen Arne Johnson at the exorcism, and that he had knelt down next to David while they were performing the exorcism, which the church, by the way, refused to do a formal exorcism, and Lorraine Warren kind of assisted in a informal exorcism, which was common for them. Lean down next to the boy and say, I didn't write the quote down, I should have. Basically, he said, come into me instead, leave the lad alone, when they were trying to exorcise him. The Warrens also claimed that David did not have only one demon in his body, which is what the movie says. The movie, neither of you have seen it.
I have.
You have seen it?
I've watched it, yes.
Wildly.
I watched Luca 2 days ago.
Wildly dramatized. I mean, like, to the point where it's almost fiction. It is very loosely based off of this story. There was no, like, woman who had cursed him. There was no devil-like artifact that they found. There wasn't anything crazy like that.
Really? So that was all made up?
Oh, that entire movie was made up. Like, the whole movie was made up. It's very loosely based
off
of this
story. Like, the
only
thing that I could think of that sounds like it came from the case was, like, asking the thing to come into him.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, the plot line of the movie is based off the case. Like, the little boy had a demon in him.
Yeah.
And Arne Johnson, the boyfriend of the boy's older sister, told him to come into him, and then the murder happened, and then all this stuff happened. All in all, really, the case is pretty cut and dry, and not as confusing and interesting as everyone thinks it is. The movie, obviously, it took many creative liberties. Mm-hmm. But
as
actually, the case gets kind of volatile as the years pass. So, the judge quickly dismissed Johnson's claim, obviously. There was no time.
No self-respecting judge would have taken that.
And no time was spent.
And I believe in their paranormal. You can't waste your time on that. Like, it's not something that we have the technology or the proof or the availability to take now. Mm. Unfortunately, in those cases, you have to take an insanity plea because that's just where we're at.
Yeah, so he didn't.
Or be fucking guilty.
Yeah, no, he didn't. He didn't take an insanity plea. He was, from what I could gather, Arne was actually very well-mannered. The judge quickly dismissed Johnson's claim, and Johnson was sentenced to prison for 10 to 20 years, which he only served just shy of 5 years for, on good behavior. He was released on good behavior just shy of 5 years. While in prison, he got a degree, married Deborah, his girlfriend, David's older sister, and to our knowledge, has not committed another murder or anything of the like.
Huh. Well, that's good, I mean.
Here's where things get a little volatile.
Oh, no.
2006, David Glatzel's older brother, Carl, who is not represented in the movie whatsoever, sues Lorraine Warren, claiming that his brother's quote-unquote exorcism was a hoax created by Ed and Lorraine. Carl is quoted saying, "It was like a living hell. That's why I moved out of Connecticut. I never believed any of that bullshit." He believes Ed and Lorraine Warren, quote, "concocted a phony story about demons in an attempt to get rich and famous at our expense," unquote. Convinced young David, who Carl says suffered from mental illness at a very young age, that he was experiencing a demonic possession. Carl Glatzel not only sued Lorraine, but the publishing agency, William Morris, who published author Gerald Brittle's book about the quote-unquote true story called The Devil in Connecticut, which is no longer in print.
Hmm.
The lawsuit went nowhere, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot to fight on. It's just a bunch of circumstantial evidence.
I think the only thing
on both sides, yeah.
And the only thing you could sue for semi-successfully in that case would be, like, defamation of character.
Yeah, defamation of character, emotional damages.
Emotional damages, maybe, but you have to, like, significantly prove it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk to my therapist.
And now we're going to flip the coin, because here's where I want the discussion to start. Why, if not for some kind of paranormal involvement, or, I don't know, I literally don't know. I mean, paranormal involvement, that's a stretch, but would Arne Johnson not remember the murder and not commit another one afterwards?
From what I understand of, like, the psychology I took years ago in college, there is, on occasion, events that are so traumatic that it triggers your brain to not form that memory, period.
Yeah.
Even if you're the one committing the trauma, it's still traumatizing to a human brain, which yours is. So that is a very real possibility.
Yeah, I thought about that because I just finished watching The Keepers on Netflix about the murder of Sister Kathy Sesnick and Joyce Malecki, and that is what she is called. They refer to her as Jane Doe, which we later find out her name is Jean. I can't remember her last name. Has this in the early 90s, she came forward accusing, oh gosh, I have watched this series and now his name is far from my brain currently. The father, the priest.
We can call him Friedrich.
No, we're not going to call him that. He was a terrible man. The father.
Not a great name. Sorry, Fred. Friedrichs.
The father of the bishop of the school that she went to, not the archbishop, but like one of the priests at the Catholic school that she attended.
Someone that has, like,
violently abused her and several other girls. And she had repressed those memories. And in the early 90s, that was the first time they had ever heard of the phenomenon of memory repressing. It was several years later, actually, her case went nowhere.
Yeah.
And her and Jane Roe, their cases went nowhere because it wasn't until several years later that science proved that memory repression existed.
Yeah, well, I just listened last week to, I think it was a re-release of an episode while a podcast is on hiatus, talking about, or maybe it was just an old episode I was listening to, talking specifically about the caution and the kind of, the disagreement in the psychology community, those that are trained, on retrieving repressed memories, because there's a majority of research, and I haven't delved into it a lot recently. It's something I still need to look into, and I heavily suggest everyone do their own research before they make a decision, that recovering repressed memories is not as cut and dry and is not as provable as they used to think it was. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of evidence that it's planted memories based around interviews, and they specifically focused on child abuse cases that they were trying to tie to the Satanic Panic in, like, the 70s and 80s, because they would interrogate 8-year-olds for hours and spoon-feed them the questions until they answered yes.
That's something that the docuseries The Keepers went over, is that especially in the early 90s, there was a ton of early 90s of young of adults coming forward and saying that they had these memories of being abused that never happened because they were being drawn out of them from
but it was a tie between, like, children in preschools and the Satanic Church and Satanic whatever, so parents were teaching their kids and training their kids to tell these stories to get these people in trouble because they were worried that their kids were actually being hurt. It was like the whole mass parenting hysteria panic. Also, let's change the word hysteria. And then there was just kind of like the impressionability of children and the interrogation tactics of humans in general, which still needs to be addressed. But, like, also, if you interrogate an 8-year-old and ask them the same questions for hours, they will tell you what they want to hear. Children want to make adults happy. Because that helps. Like, if you make an adult happy, having grown up as a child of trauma, if you make an adult happy, they will fulfill your basic needs. So anyways, that's always, I guess, with case to case, kind of take memory repression with a grain of salt. I'm curious to think, like what percentage of you thinks that he did it and this is a lie? And what percentage of you thinks that he did it and he did blackout or there was a possession or something? Like, where do you kind of stand on that?
Here's my thing. We don't have all the information.
We never will.
No, we
There's
never.
There's a lot of things we'll never have all the information.
We'll never know, because Lorraine Warren claimed that there was so much documentation on this. And like I said, the creme de la creme of the Catholic Church was involved.
I don't doubt that. I think my knowledge of the Catholic Church and everything that's come out in recent years, they're hiding something, and I think I wouldn't put it past them hiding this.
Oh, I have a lot to say. Well, I will be doing an episode on Sister Kathy Sesnick. I have a lot to say about the Catholic Church.
Can we, real quick, if you are religious or spiritual, that's fucking great. When you use an organized religion to oppress and abuse people, I will fight you.
Yeah. I have nothing.
That's not up for debate. None of us are going to be debating with that. You freedom of religion, do what you want. Don't be an asshole.
No, the Catholic Church is.
The church itself, not the church itself and, like, the toxic members, not, like, the individuals that practice.
No, we don't have a problem with the religion. Fine. We have a problem with the church.
It's the organization, the institution that upholds hatred.
I have a lot to say about the Catholic Church. They are hiding a lot. They are hiding a lot of abuse. They are hiding a lot of just malarkey. Yeah.
I will be monologuing during that episode as a fifth-generation pastor's kid.
Yeah, so I have a lot.
I outrank all of you. Not you guys, the listeners who think they know better than me in religion. Five generations, baby.
But you're not Catholic.
No, but in Christianity, like, there's some lap over, and then especially growing up in a small town, the Catholics and the Christians all knew each other, so we all saw each other's.
Yeah, for sure. But anyway, this case, not as exciting as the movie made it seem, which is fine. I mean, we know that movies take creative liberties.
But I did like the movie, though.
The movie was fantastic.
The movie's good for entertainment. I will never watch it. Movie's good for entertainment. Cases like this are really good to get you thinking and kind of researching kind of everything.
Because you want the truth behind it, and if you realize the truth is not as exciting as
cases like this, I think are great deep dive points into, like, I'm interested in learning about, like, the depths of religious culture, and I'm interested about learning, like, the psychology of why brains block trauma and memories, and I'm interested in learning, like, because I do believe in ghosts. Like, we talk to ghosts at work all the time. I'm interested in learning, like, kind of the mechanics and the stories behind the, like, you know, the other side. And so it's just a really great jumping off point for, like, research and interest in other places that will take you to cases similar to it that have more information.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, for sure.
So they're two different stories for two different purposes, I guess.
Yeah. I think the logical part of me wants to say, no, he absolutely did it, and that was just a repressed memory. Like, he saw red. I don't know what the argument was about. I don't know what happened, but he lunged at him and killed him. It might have been accidental. He might not remember pulling the pocket knife. He might have just meant to attack him in general, like,
because
throw a punch.
Because there are people who, like, in a fit of rage, they will black out because they don't know what they did.
That's, to draw back on a few episodes ago when I covered the real-life Chicago murderesses from Chicago, Mary Murderesses from Chicago. Velma Kelly's story in the movie and musical is that she flew into a fit of rage and blacked out, and she didn't know they were dead, and she was washing her hands and blood was running off of them. That's her story. And it's very similar to the real-life woman who was like, I woke up in bed and he was in my car dead. Like, it was just, like, it was a
it's
blackout.
It's scary.
Thing. Yeah.
It's scary to see, like, I don't know what it is. It's something in their brain that, like...
And it's scary to think that, it could be a trauma thing that all humans are susceptible to. But, and especially because I have recently started reading again, because I haven't forever. I'm reading a book about Marilyn Monroe's life, and her mother and her grandmother and herself were both plagued with mental illnesses, so it's generational. So to think that it's something in your brain that you have no control over, that's in your genetics, that causes you to slip and lose memory, is terrifying, because you don't know. Titus is 23. 2 years ago, while I was still living in Denver, there was about a six-month period of time where this kid was so anxious 24/7 for 6 months that he was going to get Alzheimer's. 6 months. It got to the point he bought himself a 23andMe kit and paid extra for the health to get it off of his chest because he was terrified. And I was like, buddy, you're 21. He's like, I know, it's just scary. And I was like, do what you got to do to make yourself comfortable, but, like, it's okay. So he's very excited that the test came back that he has no predisposition to Alzheimer's or dementia, which I'm hoping means I don't. I know our genetics are slightly different, but but yeah. So, like, to kind of know that we don't know anything about the human brain, anything.
No, we and know so, we know more about our ocean than we know about the human brain,
which is 5%. But to, like, have that knowledge that something like that could happen, and you don't know if you blacked out because it's a traumatic thing, or you blacked out because your brain's going. There's something not working right. And so just to kind of, like, live with that balance of that could happen. Thankfully, it's something most of us, like a huge majority of us, don't think about day-to-day and don't have to think about day-to-day. But, like, when you bring up cases like this, it really makes you think and contemplate, like, what is going on up in there? Which is why I think it was really great that it was a really serendipitous, like, great thing that we talked about mental health at the beginning of this. Cause It flows with this. There's a lot of studies that say your mental health and your bodily, like, physical health are entwined. Mm-hmm. I used to have a friend who, we're kind of reconnecting, but once she started treating her anxiety, she was really anxious for a while, and then she got really, really physically sick, like hospitalized sick. And then they started treating that, and they couldn't find out what it was, and so she started treating her anxiety at the same time, and then they figured out what it was, and as she started treating both of those things, she got significantly better very, very fast. Mm-hmm. So, like, you ever notice if you're stressed, you won't eat. Mm-hmm. That's not good for your body. It causes, like, a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. So take care of your mental health. Like, mm-hmm. do what you have access to do in safe ways to, like, because very unfortunately, mental health help is not affordable here.
No.
But there's so many resources out there that you can find. I'm not going to name apps because, A, they haven't paid us, and, B, in research I've done with certain apps that are paid by a lot of podcasts, they're not good.
No.
So you have to do your own research on that. Definitely take care of yourself. A very free and very effective way before I started any of my mental health journey, I started meditating, and I got, I think, like, from where I was, I got 100% better. And mm-hmm. I've just been growing from there.
Yeah.
Just, I was angry for a month while I was meditating because it rewires your brain, mm-hmm. but I was less anxious. Mm-hmm. I could sleep better. I was less insecure. And that came from me taking 5 minutes a day and listening to guided meditation. So that, like, yeah. it's free, it's on YouTube.
You don't need to take
we
it out.
Can put somewhere on, like, we can put a link in our Instagram bio or a link on Twitter or something to YouTube meditations that would help if anyone would like
I
that
got
resource.
Some good, I got some
yeah,
good
she's
ones.
Got some good ones that yeah. she sent me.
Mm-hmm. I'm currently building a list of meditations for one of my little brother's friends who's starting kind of getting himself all together and right, like, kind of like collect your life thing. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted some meditations and he wanted guided ones because he's very much like me and can't be alone with his own thoughts, like, mm-hmm. can't get out of his head. So guided meditations are a really great way to do that.
Yeah.
If you
especially for sleeping, the sleep ones
oh
are
my God.
I've always used guided meditation for sleeping.
I 9 times out of 10 will fall asleep immediately to sleep meditations. I listened to 7 last night. 7.
There's one that I love, and it's oh gosh. I don't know. I'll have to find the video, but it's this guy talking, and he's got a very soothing voice, and he's walking you through a fall village.
Ooh.
And it describes, like, I love the end, like, it describes you sitting on the porch, and it's dark, and it's windy, and there's, like, the fall leaves, like, run, like, tumbling across
nice.
The yard. It's wonderful.
One of the ones that I really like is, like, she guides you through, like, the beach.
Mm. I listened to one last night where he guided you, like, up a lighthouse, and then you, like, looked out on the ocean. I was mm-hmm. like, oh my God, I want to die here. Not an invitation.
It's amazing to, like, think of how, like, these guided meditations, how you can actually picture it in your head, and you feel like you were actually there.
I think recently I've had a really hard time. I used to be a very vivid daydreamer, like, mm-hmm. very vivid. You've seen me zone out, mm-hmm. like, while you're talking, and I don't mean to, and I know it's rude. I have no control over it.
No, I know.
Well, now in ADHD medications, I'm hoping it helps, but, like, I'm straight up not there, super visualization kind of person. Like, I see things. Mm-hmm. But, like, last night specifically, and I think it might have been me being in my head, but very recently I've been having trouble adding visualizations like I used to. It's more, like, talky words in my head. So I gotta get myself back to, like, the visualization because I miss it.
Yeah.
It makes my writing better.
I have never understood people, and I did not know that this wasn't normal until, like, fairly recently. I did not know that, like, when I write, I see everything like a movie in my head.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And kind I did not learn until recently that that wasn't normal.
Is it not?
No.
What? Okay.
I have a question. Sorry, go ahead.
I've been... Wait.
What are you doing?
Then we are just some really unique people because...
Dude, we
it's
are
not,
all mentally,
I mean, it's
like,
not like,
disorderly.
It's not, like, unique, right? Like, it's not, like, a super rare thing. Like, people do
is
that.
Is it
it's just
more related to, like, neurodivergency and how you see the world?
I don't know. I just know that a lot of people don't have an inner monologue and therefore don't visualize when they're writing or when they... Mm-hmm. are daydreaming
or something too.
They don't visualize very well.
Okay, yeah. I have a genuine question for someone with a multitude of things from CPTSD to ADHD and all that. And up until recently, I could not be in silence at all, ever, mostly by myself. And then I started kind of meditating and taking anti-anxiety medications and ADHD, so I, like, am in less of a downward spiral when I'm mm-hmm. alone because I always have thoughts running in my head.
Yeah.
Always. There's never any silent space. And so is that just me or is, like, do y'all ever have, or listeners, like, please tweet me or comment on Instagram. I need to know what's driving me crazy. Do y'all ever just, like, not have a thought in your head? It's just blank silence? Or is there always, like, words or something going?
There's always.
I'll have that.
So there's always words
going. There's always words going. Sometimes you'll have silence.
Mm-hmm. I never have silence.
Interesting. I've never had silence.
If anyone wanted to know, the one that I'm talking about is by their YouTube channel called The Honest Guys, and they have a sleep meditation, The Autumn Village, and it's very nice. Anyway.
Okay. No, but, like, sometimes I will be silence, and, like, it's almost like I can even hear it in my ears.
Mm. What's it, like, what's hearing, like, what's silence and no thoughts? What is it like?
There's nothing. There's nothing.
I don't like that I can't comprehend that.
It's like nothingness. That's almost, and it's
fucking crazy to me. I just, it's so interesting because I'm like, I remember in high school, what did
you? I whispered to the podcast, I was like, I saw something I want. And then I ran away.
Kat got Girl Scout cookies.
We have boxes and boxes of Girl Scout cookies.
Guys, it's July 8th. It's nowhere near Girl Scout cookie season. We have boxes of boxes,
yes,
in this room. Like the boxes that they hold, the boxes they sell to you in. All I was saying before cookies took over my life again, as they always do. Does anyone else remember, like, in high school, your parents explaining to you that, it was always explained to me, like, guys or male presenting guys, just like assigned male at birth, dude bros.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh yeah, there's not a thought in his head. And I was like, that's not possible. Like, it's possible. I did not know that was a thing. I genuinely think it was just like, no, they're just dumb. But, like, people can actually just not have thoughts in their head.
Yeah. But it's, like, it's a fleeting thing for me. Like, if I have, like, if it goes blank.
Yeah.
It's only for, like, a little bit. And then my head is, like, constantly chattery.
Interesting.
Afterwards. Mm. So, I don't know.
Okay. One last thing before we wrap up. I'm so sorry. I just have this. Do you guys see in, or, like, do you guys think in words, pictures, or both?
Both.
Okay, yeah.
It depends on what, if I've been writing a lot or reading a lot, I will oftentimes narrate in my head, mm-hmm, my actions and movements throughout the day.
Yeah.
When I'm writing, I see it in pictures.
Yeah.
In visuals, and then I narrate what's happening.
Mm-hmm. See, and for that, like, I, most of the time, my inner thoughts are, like, a narrative and words, mm-hmm, accompanied with, like, kind of some imagery, especially when I'm daydreaming, zoning out, when I'm in a time in my life where I can daydream, because it hasn't been this last week or recently. But when I'm looking back on memories, I'm looking at it third person like I'm watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can see myself in my memories.
Yeah. Me too.
Like, that's crazy.
Me too.
So,
yeah.
I'm curious. I'm trying to think of what it's called. Okay.
Oh, sorry, Bella.
Have you guys ever heard of the disorder synesthesia?
Synesthesia?
Synesthesia.
Yeah.
Synesthesia.
Yeah, I studied it in college. It's so fucking cool.
Fascinating.
Do you guys, like, think that you might have it? Because there's multitude of different ways.
So my understanding of it and what I personally believe off of, like, who I am as a person and kind of what I experience in the world is that, so synesthesia is a disorder of mirror neurons in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a disorder that can be on a spectrum because, mm-hmm, it is, like, a number of mirror neurons. Like, you can have an quote-unquote appropriate amount, and then you can have a heightened or increased or whatever amount that causes extreme versions of synesthesia in which you would think of when you're discussing it. I think it being a spectrum thing, I think I have not synesthesia, but I have a heightened number of mirror neurons,
mm-hmm,
that cause synesthesia like what's the word I'm looking for, kind of experiences in my body.
Mm-hmm.
So we studied this one woman who had it so bad that she had to eat dinner separate from her family because she would start choking because she would see her family chewing and her mirror neurons would fire their chewing and her chewing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so she would start choking. She couldn't go to her daughter's graduation because there was a ton of people there. So she was experiencing all of their pain that she saw and whatever. So that's a very extreme case. And that's one version of it because there's a trillion different versions of it.
Like some people can, like, taste things. Like words.
Yeah, there's some people on TikTok that can taste names or taste words. Mm-hmm. And so they'll make videos on that. I have a painting done by a girl that can see music.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a painting of a song from Hamilton because I bought it during, like, my extreme Hamilton fangirl phase. In case you're wondering, it's Quiet Uptown, which is the most heartbreaking song in the world. Beautiful painting, though. I'll, like, pull it out of my room when I can dig it out. It's gorgeous. And then there's stuff like that. I think I have a, not synesthesia, but, like, a low-level heightened amount of mirror neurons because when I see someone hugging, I feel my body experience, like, a squeeze sensation.
Mm-hmm.
When I see people high-fiving, like, the palms of my hand feel that sting.
That is a type of that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So I'm wondering if that you do have that then.
again, like, I believe it's a kind of a spectrum thing, and I'm on the low end of I have a heightened number of those mirror neurons. I'm not a psychologist. I haven't done the testing. I'm not a neuroscientist, so I don't know. Yeah. That's just my experience in the world, and that's kind of the conclusion I draw based on my research.
I have no idea. The only thing that I've ever experienced, and still do, the only thing I experience when I, is when I smell things. That's why I started getting into, I got into making perfume mm-hmm. and stuff when I was in middle school. And it was, I had seen it being done in a book. I had read about it. And so I thought, oh, that's cool. So I just was like playing with it. But I quickly realized when I smell things, mm-hmm. I can see what I'm smelling.
Do you ever have those, like, you'll walk into a room and it's a smell and you're like, it's the fourth grade and it's the book fair on
everyone,
October 3rd.
Yeah, everyone does yeah. that. Yeah, everyone does okay. that. But I'm talking about, so let me give an example. I actually, when we talked about this in my psychology class, I brought up my favorite book is called The Night Circus by Aaron mm-hmm. Morgenstern. And there's a part in that book where Widget, one of the characters, he makes scents that are bottled. And in his tent, there's like nothing but bottles upon bottles upon bottles, and when you open one and you smell it smells it's magic, right? So it literally takes you to that place mm-hmm. for a few seconds. That's what it does to me. Mm-hmm. That's how I can explain, is like when I smell something that reminds me of something, or even if I've never smelled it yeah. before, I will immediately see in my brain like what it is showing
yeah.
me.
Yeah. Science has proved that smell is one of the like most intense like memory triggers.
I've written a paper about it.
I'm so proud of
you. I wrote a whole paper about it. yeah. no, I'm not brilliant. I just wrote a paper because I'm so intrigued by smell and by what it can do to your memory and what it can do for you as a person.
Yeah.
I remember correctly, I think mirror neurons are also partly responsible for feeling sympathy and empathy for others. Mm-hmm. So empaths also, which I think all three of us are,
yes.
naturally have higher mirror neurons because we can pick up on emotions, which is much, much harder to pick up on than seeing someone high five, because it's like my empathy and my like empathaticness, like whatever it is both innate in me. Like it's part of how I was born, but it's also was heightened during trauma in early childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So mine is extremely heightened to the point of, like, I can see your eye twitch in a way that I don't know that I saw, and mm-hmm. that you don't know that you saw, but I know what you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Not, like, the words that you're thinking, because I'm not admiring your...
I do that same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm very empathic, but I also was raised in an environment where I was completely desensitized to... Mm-hmm. I can't think of the word right now. Not violence, but I guess kind of violence, and not in my household, but in my dad, in the world. So I'm very
bad things.
Yeah.
The
so,
negative.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm very desensitized to negative things. So I'm very empathic. And when
makes sense for the podcast we host.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause when I hear about bad things happening, or when I see something bad happen to a person, my first mm-hmm. thought is always like, oh my God, I hope that person is okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I feel bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I do the same thing that you do, Chloe, where when you like look at someone and you know exactly what they're thinking, you know, you can sense the little changes in their mm-hmm. moods and whatnot. I
like,
do that
I can tell
too.
You're lying to me. I can tell you're not okay.
But
I'm not going to push it.
When I see something bad happen.
Yeah.
It's, or when I hear about something bad that happens, like, I watch endless documentaries about serial killers and stuff.
Yeah.
My immediate thought is, like, yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, there's very little, like, I will think to myself, like, that person is a monster, like, that this is terrible, but I'm also, like, this is how the human psyche works.
Yeah.
Like, this happens.
I'm wondering if your brain learned from a young age to compartmentalize what you see in the real life. In bad things
mm-hmm.
into what you see in media in bad things. And usually when it's in the media, it's focusing on the killer itself. So you're like, yeah, he's a piece of shit. But if you see something in real life, you're usually seeing the victim and they're hurting.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think your brain is very good at compartmentalizing that this tragic thing happened and it's tragic for this person, and this person deserves no sympathy and they're a piece of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Guys, neurodivergency is a fucking superpower.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks sometimes because the world's not made for us, but it's a goddamn superpower.
It's like, I don't know, sometimes I feel... I when I was, especially when I was like a teenager and I started recognizing more of this stuff that went mm-hmm. on with me, late teenagers, early 20s.
Yeah.
I panicked for a while and was like, is something wrong with me? like, is something wrong with me? Because whenever I, like, hear about serial killers, like, of course I have the general thought of, like, that's awful, that person is monstrous. But then I'm like,
you
want to
know more.
It happens.
And you want to know more.
And I want to know more,
yeah.
That's why
we're all working on this podcast.
I mean, everyone wants to know more, right? Everyone wants to fucking know.
I've gotten looks like I'm crazy when I'm like, oh, this is a serial killer.
Oh, I just want... Well, here's the thing, though. I've never felt bad for wanting to know more, and here's why. Because it is natural human instinct that when something bad happens... We love the morbid. And for God's sake...
1800s, anybody? Mummy unwrapping parties.
I just finished watching a docuseries on Netflix called The Ripper about the Jack the Ripper.
Not from
the 1880s, but from the 1980s.
What?
Yeah, from the mid-70s to the early 1980s, there was what they called the Ripper. He evaded police for so long, but he was right under their noses the whole time. They were just a bunch of idiots. But I just remember, as I'm watching this series, I was like, the reason I don't feel bad for, like, wanting to know more is because when they finally caught him, his name was, I had it, hold on. His name is Peter something. God, I just
watched.
I literally just finished watching that this morning. Yeah, I'm gonna Google it. But when they caught him, literally thousands and thousands of people lined the streets to try to get into the court hearing and B, watch him be taken away because he had been tormenting this area of the UK for
so long.
Yeah.
Like I think 5 years.
Was it like a Richard Ramirez like chase down the street style like? That's the fucker, but not like he was already captured, so
kind
they didn't really rid of him. But
no,
like,
it was more of like a as soon as he walked out, like everyone gathered around because they wanted to see him. And as soon as he got out of the police car, it was like people were screaming. I mean, they were screaming like they were screaming at him to die. They were screaming at him that he had finally been caught. They were just freaking out because everyone wanted to know more about this guy.
Yeah. It's kind of unrelated, but I was talking with my grandma yesterday. And we were talking about our family tree because I have done extensive research in building our family tree because,
Sorry, interrupting. The guy's name was Peter Sutcliffe.
Okay.
And they had interviewed him 9 times.
What?
9 times. I'm probably going to cover this case.
Please do.
In the future, but just a little tidbit of information. There, within the 5 years, he killed 13 women. And attacked several more before that, actually. Mm-hmm. But this case, they were so, quote-unquote, on top of this case that
they interviewed him 9 times. You're not on top of shit. You're, like,
they had
slipping through straws and through the cracks. And, like, you lucked out.
They had so much paperwork on, like, hundreds, thousands of men in the area that they had to put concrete pillars under their floor because
is this the case
contractor
where they asked
in
the city to like all the men to donate DNA samples?
I don't. They didn't mention that in the docuseries.
I think it might be something else.
It did trigger a lot of like in the late 70s. You know, feminism was a coming of age kind of thing and
burn the bra.
But it did trigger because they were telling women not to walk around alone at night because he was attacking women that were alone.
We still get told this.
Yeah.
Teach your sons not to fucking hurt people.
Yeah. Exactly.
Teach your sons.
That's what the women were like. Yeah. The women were like, no, fucking men stay off the street. Why should we
have to? Men get the curfew. You're the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And
it's obviously not generalized, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they had so much paperwork. On just so many men that they had to put concrete pillars under the floor of their department because a contractor came in and said it was going to cave in if they didn't do that, if they didn't reinforce it. Because there was just millions of pieces of paper that they had. But yeah, that was... I'm going to go further into detail. That case, the Ripper case, is just absolutely fascinating. And just the police absolutely fucked themselves.
Yeah.
They fucked themselves so hard. And it was just one because they had three pieces of evidence that they were really, like, really going on. And two of those pieces of evidence were a hoax that they didn't realize were a hoax until much later. And even when somebody called it out, when a police officer called it out and said, hey, guys, I think this is a hoax, the heads of the department were like, absolutely not. It absolutely isn't a hoax. How could it be?
Yeah.
But there were so many. I'll get into it later.
Yeah,
anyway.
We're running kind of long. But this, this story that you did today, and it just was a really great delve into why we talk about what we talk about. It's the psychology of everything, kind of like, especially as...
It's fascinating. Not because, I mean, the case itself is kind of boring. But
it's a jumping off point.
Yeah, it's a jumping off point because it's fascinating to understand, like, there's a difference between serial killer, the psychology of serial killers, and the psychology of a man who murdered once, has no memory of it, and...
A snap.
It's totally different.
Yeah, completely. Totally different. We've never talked about that before. Yeah.
And I think, especially for people like us who are both neurodivergent and also very much into psychology, and especially of psychology of how brains work, and we specifically look into this, like, the morbid. But, like, I grew up thinking I was crazy because I didn't function the way other people function. I didn't think that I thought the way that other people thought. And I don't. And I'm learning that now as an adult in therapy, getting diagnoses and going through my life and understanding why my brain formed the way it did and why I do things the way I do. Mm-hmm. And so, especially in your late teens and early 20s, you don't know that you're, like, you know that you're different, but you don't know why. And you don't know that it's okay that you're different.
Yeah.
And you don't know that, being that different makes you beautiful. It's hard, but you can do it. Mm-hmm. And you don't know that there's resources to help you be yourself and also function in a world that's not built for you.
Yeah.
And so reading the, like, being on a spectrum of people who are not quote-unquote normal, because no one's normal, but being an evil side of, like, something is wrong with you, you hurt someone, and then being us who's like, I saw a scroll yesterday and pointed at it and giggled. Like, I was writing. I was doing something. And so to see, like, the two, like, it's super innocent spectrum and the evilness that can come out of a single species brain based on what's probably mere clicks. Mm-hmm. Like, the slightest misfire of an electroid, whatever the fuck is in your brain.
Yeah.
The slightest misfire is the difference between me being easily distracted and, like, being goofy and silly and cartoony and someone who feels nothing for other people in human life. So it's like...
I just want to say the brain is just a mystery.
The brains are fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's such a mystery because...
The whole world's a mystery.
It is. Like, but our brains are just such a complicated matter.
Yeah. And now I know what I'm hyperfixating on for the next 2 weeks.
All right, everyone. I know that episode kind of took a turn and went all over the place, but that's what we do here. That's what we do here.
I kind of love the off-the-rails episode.
I do, too. I love it. But anyway, so before we end, I want to throw out there that we are advertising ad spots. Just email us at spookytimetea@gmail.com. We will discuss contracts. We'll discuss pricing. We'll discuss product.
If you're a good fit for the podcast and you feel comfortable promoting your product, we'll go back and forth. We have a questionnaire that we're building.
Yeah.
To make sure that it's right for both of us. We're really excited to, like, open ad spots.
And... Yeah. We're very excited.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to Spooky Time Tea, where we talk about ghosts, ghouls, murders, and mysteries, and everything in between, all while enjoying a cup of tea, like a tea party, but spooky.
Spooky.
Remember, everyone, it's okay to get help. We love you all very much, and if you need to reach out and talk to someone, but you don't know who to go to, reach out to us, and we are willing to talk to you and maybe help you if we can.
Yeah. And we can guide you to trained professionals that if we can't help you, they can.
Yeah. So have a lovely evening, everyone. And remember, sweet dreams.